Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to The Curator Podcast, Season 2, Episode 14, an interview with Chris Cresswell from The Flatliners. Chris, we're moving.
We are.
We're fucking moving, man.
Yeah, we're getting kicked off the private road.
I've never recorded in a moving van. Spilling my beer everywhere.
First time? Van stalled. Oh, I sold him out. Sorry.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Fuck. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It's a bit loud. Let's turn it down a little bit.
Sure.
So, I'm going to start with the stock question. Do you know what I'm going to ask you first?
Oh, I have no idea.
How's the tour been?
Oh, I'm on tour right now. All right, okay. It's been great, man. I mean, me and the guys in the Flatliners are excited to be out here playing some new songs. To be back in Glasgow is always nice. It's a beautiful day, and I will say that you said that this is not like normal Glasgow.
Yeah, it's uncharacteristic like Glasgow.
Yeah. But I mean, on top of all that, to be out here with the Menzingers and the Dirty Nil is fucking sick. I've known the Menzingers dudes for a long time. I haven't toured with them in like 6 years. And it's really cool to see all they've done. You know what I mean? Like
you see it
every night, show to show, how many people are singing along to every word. And dude, it's fucking rad. Yeah.
Speaking of them, you know, having not played with them for 6 years, I was thinking about this earlier on, right? I've been a fan for your band probably for about 10 years. And like you guys tour a fucking lot.
We do.
Why?
We do. I don't know. We kind of ask ourselves that question, like, every couple of years. We're just like, man, we did a fucking lot. Like, why'd we do all that? It's fun. I mean, you know, that's kind of it. Like, you're kind of forced to, though, to be honest. I was just kind of taking the piss. Like, we have a fucking blast doing it. You're kind of forced to, though. Like, in the sense of, like, if this is what you want to do with your life, if music is your life and you play in a band, you have to tour. Because, like, if you want your band to be, like, the prominent thing you're doing with your time, let's say. Just because, like, it's A, way more fun than sitting around and waiting for an album to sell, because it won't. That's just the reality that we all live in now. But, I mean, things have changed, man. Like, I think, like, live music culture has just become so much more important, like in the last, let's say, 10 years. Just as much as it was in, like, you know, like, the 60s and 70s when that's how you heard the music that you wanted to hear. Was you go to a show, you know what I mean? Obviously, you can hear fucking music from any tiny little computer box in your possession now, and it's never been easier, but I like the fact that it's forced bands' hands, let's say, to tour a lot more. I mean, for me, like, I come to Glasgow and get to see you and get to see Bob, and we get to go to any other city anywhere, and there's usually a friend in town. You know what I mean? It's a really nice feeling.
See, when you started making music, and like, you were very fucking young when you started.
Yeah.
I did a lot of research today, man. I read a lot of interviews. I feel like I know everything about you almost now.
Yeah, probably more than I like remember about myself.
But like, was that the most eye-opening thing, like coming back to a city and seeing the same faces?
Yes, yeah. Like, that was like the first real grip we got, let's say, on not how it all works, but like how important it is, you know? Because I think the best advice I've ever gotten from anyone, and it's not just from one person, it's from a lot of people, is don't be an asshole. You know, if you're doing this, you're lucky to do it. Like, it is a struggle. It's definitely a very peculiar, like, it can be a very taxing way to live. However, you're pretty lucky to get to do what any of us get to do, playing music and traveling around and stuff. So why be a dick about it? Because if you are a dick, the first time you go to a city, let's say, and you meet a bunch of great people, but you're not in the mood, or you're having a bad day, or you're just an asshole, people remember that. You might not remember that, but everyone else will, right? So the next time you go back and none of those people want to talk to you, you didn't really do the right thing, you know? We've been really lucky with making a lot of great friends all over the world, and I think that the reason is because I think we're a pretty approachable band, like as far as just how we are as people. And it's always been important to us to meet those people that are into the band and to just kind of try our best to, like, break that wall down between fan and band. Because at the end of the day, man, like, there are a lot of people in the crowd watching the Flatliners play that are all each great at something else. Like, we're trying to be great at playing music. Like, maybe there are other things that each of us are talented in, but, like, music is the thing. Every single person that goes to a show, like, is good at something. So I try my best, and I think the rest of the guys are the same, to keep in mind, like, maybe not, everyone's not here for the same reason. I mean, on Earth, like, living. But everyone's got the same end result. Just, like, success is just being happy with what you do. And if you can do it well, that'll only make you happier. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, we kind of take that mentality towards, yeah, like, the fan base. And just be like, hey, man, like, I'm just some fucking guy that has a guitar. I don't know. Like, it's, like, I also think it comes from a place, like, we've been so lucky to meet such great bands that we've grown up admiring and have shaped who we are as musicians and the kind of music that we, you know, play and all these things. And, like, 99% of those people have been very, very cool, very welcoming, very generous, very lovely, you know, all these things. I think we've been super lucky because, I mean, 99% is pretty good.
You're still here, so you must have had something.
Yeah, man.
And hard work. And speaking of not being a dick, can we just address something? We have some beers, Chris.
Yeah.
Chris got me a beer.
Absolutely.
It's the first ever band to do that in all these interviews.
Wow. You've interviewed a lot of assholes. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Shh.
If you say that, then.
I'm just kidding. That was me. Just joking.
Yeah. So, yeah, speaking of playing with heroes, man, like, I can only imagine when I was, like, 15... And I couldn't have imagined when I was in a band, and I was in a band, and obviously I didn't have the hard yards, I guess you guys did. But then you suddenly, like, you're on Fat Rec, and, like, you're hanging out with Fat Mike, and you're doing all that shit, and now 15 years later, you're kind of, like, still fucking doing it. And it's, like, it keeps getting, like, you keep going further.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, it's been a really gradual thing, and I don't mean that in a bad way at all. It's been great. I mean, the Fat years... That whole thing, like, was such a shock. And, like, it kind of still is, you know what I mean? Like, we grew up on NoFX's music and Lagwagon's music and No Use for Names music and all these bands' music. And then one day, 19-year-old Flatliners get a phone call from Fat Mike. It didn't make any sense. We didn't think that it would go anywhere, you know what I mean? Like, we hoped it would, but we had no real... like, we weren't, like, fucking, you know, wagering anything on, like, the positive end of the Flatliners and Fat Records going down a long road together, you know? And the whole thing was awesome. I mean, yeah, that first tour we ever did with NoFX was... We were talking about this the other day with a friend, actually. Like, the first day, we were so, like, intimidated, you know what I mean? Just because of who they are to us, you know? Like, we are the same as any other 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid or fucking 30-year-old person, like going to a NoFX show. If you have the opportunity to meet these people because they've made such an impact with their music in your life, it's an intimidating feeling. But it was immediately squashed when we, like, met all of them. We'd already met Mike, and that was a huge deal. But, like, the moment we met the crew and the rest of the band and everyone was so welcoming. And I mean, they like to, like, corrupt people a little bit too, which is cool. Like, I'm definitely into that. Like, I'm saying that with a smile on my face. It was incredible. They took us everywhere. They didn't have to do that. There are, like, dozens of other Fat bands they could have taken out, but that's what Mike does. And he's really good to us over the years. Everyone at Fat, I mean, it was this whole thing where we just, like, never realized how we got there. We were fucking 19 years old, man. Like, it was weird, but in the best way.
Was that like a dream being fulfilled then at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a childhood dream come true. The first, I think it's, you know, like, we're all born in 1987. I think at that point.
God, you're younger than me.
when you're that age, when that big punk explosion in the 90s happens, for a lot of people, it's a lot of the same bands because that's kind of, that explosion was, you know, like, those particular bands. It was a lot of early Fat stuff. It was a lot of early Epitaph stuff that really molded our, like, kind of just shaped our taste in music. You know, I had an older brother. I have an older brother. He's still kicking. He's doing great. And he was, you know, like the guy. I think you always want to be as cool as your older sibling. And he was skateboarder, snowboarder. So I became a skateboarder. I became a snowboarder. And the soundtrack to those skate videos and snowboard videos were all Fat and Epitaph bands. All the early shit. That was it. It all kind of like culminated together into that perfect moment where he put on like a 4-on-1 tape. And it was like, there's a NoFX song playing. And then there's like a Rancid song playing and like a Bad Religion song playing and a Green Day song and all this kind of shit. And yeah, like years later, when you're sitting in a car getting this phone call from Fat Mike, like thinking it's like a prank phone call or something, you know, none of it makes sense. And you kind of have this almost feeling of like you're floating above your own body, just watching it happen. And your reaction time is slowed down because you like it's such like important information to be just taking in and processing. And it takes time. And I wonder if there was like a weird long pause on the phone call, you know, all these things to say, like, it was definitely a dream come true. It was insane. Yeah.
And it's now led to Rise Records.
It has. Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, I think it honestly stems from a place where none of us thought that this thing with Fat would happen. And now it's been 10 years. And that's quite the milestone. And we have made such great friendships with all those people and done so many great things with them and released a lot of music with them. And it was always easy and fun because they just do whatever the fuck the band wants to do. It's the coolest. But I think in there, it just inspired this curiosity in us to be like, well, like it kind of felt like we were at this, just as human beings, not with the band necessarily or what we do, but just as people. I think you just start to feel like, it kind of feels like there's like this other chapter. And I know that's kind of a lazy or lame way to put it potentially, but we just had this curiosity kind of burning in us. And I think the level of success we were able to reach with Fat Records was something that far exceeded our expectations because there weren't any. That we were wondering like, well, shit, like now maybe we try something else. Because especially because the people at Fat Records are so cool with that kind of shit. And maybe that is a thing that, like, you know, like, we've been doing this for 15 years. Like, we've been touring for, like, 12 years. We still have jobs. We still have all these things. It's not about the money, but it's about, like, that curiosity of, like, just being a different kind of person than you were 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, I expect that I'll always have a job, like, other than the band. And that's okay, because I think that's what it is to be a punk band now. I think that's what it is to be any genre of band, but at this level now. But it was this curiosity to see, like, well, shit, like, they fucking did a great job for 10 years, you know, like, helping us out and, like, taking this chance. Like, maybe there's someone that can take a chance on us now that can help us. I don't know. It's like that. It's not the next level, but it's you always kind of push that, like, goalpost as an artist or just as a person with your definition of success further. So you're always searching and fighting and working for it. And that's kind of where Rise came in. And I don't know if any of that makes sense, but to me it does. To us it does. And it was just a thing where we really liked what they'd done with, like their lineup is so eclectic. And it was just like, it piqued our interest to be involved in a world like that. And especially like when you, another kind of like fucking childhood dream coming true of like, being able to be like, hey, Bouncing Souls, a band I loved when I was a kid. Like, how's Rise Records? Hey, Hot Water Music, a band I loved when I was a kid. And like, obviously, I still love these two bands. To have that opportunity to go to those people and be like, because it was a pretty difficult decision to make to go from Fat somewhere else. Because Fat was nothing but positive. But again, it was just that curiosity. We're just like, well, it's been fucking killer with Fat. What if there's something else someone else can do? Like, what if there's something like none of us thought of trying to do? And not about the music, I just mean about like how to get the music out there, really. But you know, because Fat was a childhood dream come true, that's why it was a difficult decision to make. Because you don't want it to seem like you're better than that, because you're not. Truthfully, it's all so different now too. I think everyone's just trying to figure it out because the musical landscape and like the business side, the dark, greasy business end of things, like it's just there's such murky, difficult waters to navigate because I think I think the riverbed is just constantly moving and changing direction, you know, because of like technology and all these kinds of things. But yeah, I mean, like we liked what they'd done with like the new like Hot Water stuff and the Bouncing Soul stuff and thought it could be a cool place to go. And we already knew them because we did a split 7-inch with Make Do and Mend like a few months before Dead Language came out. And like Dave Haas has become a great friend of ours over the years. And we had all this kind of inside scoop. And I mean, Dave was a guy that went from the Loved Ones being on Fat and then doing his solo thing. And that was his own transformation or just, you know, putting himself out there in a new way musically. But he, you know, he made the decision to try something new label-wise. And it's sensitive subject, I think, for a lot of our fans, because I think a lot of people take it personally when a band they like or love changes their home. And it so happened to occur when, like, we put this new record out, which is there's definitely, like, a different side of us on this record. It's still obviously a Flatliners record. It's still the four of us. It's the continuation of the theory that, like, always try something new. It's what we've always done. It's just a continuation of that theory, but I know there may be some people out there that kind of connect the dot of like, well, they left Fat and now they're on a new label and there's like some new territory on this album, so it's because of the label. And it's not. I mean, the record was done before the label came into play, you know? But it's an interesting world we live in with that kind of thing. And that's just how it constantly evolves because like the way people take music in now is different. The way you can, like, any band can make a killer-sounding record now, too. To the point of, like, there are so many bands that just put their own records out now because they can. But I love the fact that there are still so many killer labels putting in that work and hoping that people fucking buy the record. Like, of a label like Fat, a label like Rise, a label like Dynalone, who's put our record out in Canada, a label like Epitaph, a label like Asian Man Records, a label like Side One Dummy, or like Kayatana, our friends from Philadelphia, a great band, they're putting their record out on their own label, Plum Records, soon. Like, all such varying degrees of, like size of label, they're all taking a risk. Even the hugest labels in the world still take risks because no one fucking buys it anymore. So, each of those people, each of those labels are going to have their mentality and their ideas towards how they're going to do it uniquely because of how difficult it is now to, like, be the business side of things and like sell a record, make your money back for the money you gave the band to record it and all this shit. And that's where it kind of stems from like that's where that curiosity kind of stems from of like, I wonder how they'd do it. It's a tiny thought that you can obviously extrapolate into all these things like I just did. It's so fascinating to me now because things are like instantly in your hand. The information is instantly in your hand and all these things change. And if you really stop to think about how it really affects each label and band and each person working at that label and each person in every band, everyone's just trying to figure it out, man.
Hey, now don't stop this podcast. This little interlude is only going to last about 5 seconds. Just take a second if you can to hit the subscribe button on whatever podcasting app you're using. That's it. That's all I'm going to ask. Okay, cool. So let's get back to this interview now with Chris from the Flatliners.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Had you given any consideration to doing it yourself?
There's I think, always been that in us. I don't know if it comes from a place where we've had friends, bands that have done it and have really suggested it or just recommended that it's a good thing to do because it's yielded them the result they want to see. You know, they're on their varying description of success. Yeah. But the thing is I think where we thrive really after we make a record is touring. And to me and the guys, there's the knowledge that like, or the belief, I should say, actually, that like, if you're going to put your own record out and you're going to tour for like at least a fucking year or two on it, that's so much extra work, I feel like, to put a record out on your own, even though it does become easier and easier all the time. Truthfully, it does. But it still is like, I feel like me and the guys just kind of get like tour tunnel vision. You know, like that's what we're doing. Like the record's done. Now we're hitting the road. And then after like a year of touring, you start to like put new songs together and then you're off the road and now you're in the studio. It's always like this very tight focus on what you're doing. And I think that if you try to roll in the Flatliners touring all the time and putting out their own record, it would be a fucking mess. I think so. And it's not like we like to have fun on tour as well and all these kinds of things. Like I think there'll be a lot of things like left at the wayside.
You don't want to be sitting there like fucking have to think about when the next shipment of CDs is going to arrive and like,
dude, exactly.
Fuck.
Exactly. You know, there are all these tiny little things like, you know, to like expose the inner workings of touring, like that already exists with merch and equipment, and there's all these fine details every single day that pop up, even like where you're going to set up gear in the venue that day, all this kind of shit. Like, I mean, these are all like tiny things, but when you're on tour, like it's a very strange way to live. So you get like all these small decisions seem to, they're your entire world almost, so they seem to be so much more important. And yeah, I think if you put another layer on top of like the distributor in Australia needs this and this and this, and you're like, fuck, like we play in 5 minutes. Like, I don't want to think about that when we're on stage. You know what I mean? All that kind of shit. I think it all kind of affects everything else.
It's a good argument for having those people to organize shit for you, because it can be a total, I mean, I ran a label for a bit myself and it was a fucking nightmare.
Was it? Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't enjoy doing it.
I mean, you know, it's like I said, a label of any size these days, I have the utmost respect for it. No matter what kind of music they're putting out, whatever it is, just because like it's a lot of work. And I think it's a lot of work that a lot of folks who aren't privy to that side of things don't realize. And everyone does it differently. You know what I mean? And I think that's the coolest thing, is that like there's no, like I'm sure like a label like, fuck, like I don't know, fucking Cap, like, yeah, like Columbia Records or Geffen or like some major, like there's like some titan that's been around forever could write a book like how to run a label, and you could probably like use a lot of those chapters to your benefit, but there's always going to be a part of that book you read you're like, I don't fucking get this, like no, that would never work for me, because it's up to the people. Like the way a label operates and the music that a label puts out, it really is a reflection of the people that run that label. You know what I mean? Like there's a reason why, like for instance, like a Fat Wreck situation, like you're hard pressed to talk to a band that's left Fat to go somewhere else that aren't like, yeah, it was a bummer. Like, it was hard. It was like a hard decision to make. You know what I mean? Like, you're hard pressed to find that band because the people that run that label are so cool. It's like probably the same for a lot of labels, you know? But yeah, like, I mean, just broad strokes, like being in a touring band outside of like the million minute details that tend to make up your entire world, it also affects you in a way where you're focusing so intently on, like, intensely on these things, and then you also have a life at home. You know what I mean? Like, that you, like, you have a family, if you have a partner. I mean, like, most of us do have partners, like, at home, and it's, they've been with us for a long time. And, like, it's kind of, like, this is kind of all they know about us, is like, yeah, he fucking leaves half the year, but they're so, like, beautifully supportive of it all.
It's like, I've put up with your shit for so long.
Yeah.
Please don't add more shit to that.
So, yeah, but, like, so not only do you have all these things day to day that you're figuring out on tour, and it's just, like, moment to moment to moment, you're kind of living, like, two lives, because then you have all the things you want to keep in touch with, all the people back home and all these things, and it can truthfully be a very exhausting way to live. And, I mean, it's super fun. But I think as you do it longer and longer, more and more, you realize like what you're always really searching for is like the balance, and is almost never going to present itself, you know?
I'm a bit conscious of time, and there's so much more I want to ask you, but I really want to get to Inviting Light.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Does it sound different to you?
To me, it doesn't. Like, it does, but the process is so gradual for the band, you know what I mean? So it's not this like stark difference that I know that some people feel or hear. I mean, you got to consider the fact that for 2 years or 3 years, we've been working on these songs. I mean, we recorded some of that shit in 2015, man. Like, some of that record we recorded, like, way back. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we did it in a few chunks. Because that's kind of proven to be the best way for us to work. Like, we did the same thing for Cavalcade, the same thing for Dead Language. And
it sounds coherent, so obviously it works.
Thank you, yeah. I mean, like, I think it just stems from a place in us where we work on it so closely, and then you mix it, you master it, all these things, and then if you can, that this is a huge reason as to why there's always these big chunks of time between albums for us, is that we, like, consciously wait. We record this, and then we don't listen to it for a while, then we come back. Then when we come back, it's also why we always have extra songs. When we come back, and if we still really love what we hear, then those songs that we love still hearing make the record. The ones that we're like, I don't know, those don't make the record. And then sometimes we'll go back. I mean, like, again, like the last few records, like, we'll go back and record more ideas. Because in that time that's passed, more ideas come up.
You keep changing as a person as well.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, we've kind of grown up on record, which is an interesting way to live, I guess. Like, we started this when we were 14, 15, released the first record when we were 16. Now we're 29. Like, we all turned 30 this year. Like, it's a weird thing to kind of grow up on record. Think of a person you know and you don't see them for, like, you know them so well. And you don't see them for, like, 2-3 years. You don't talk to them for 2-3 years. But you remember the last conversation you had with them, and it was so great. You don't see them for 2-3 years. The first time you talk to them or see them, they're going to be a different person. You're going to be a different person. Now, if you attach that logic to an artist of any kind, that is so, so powerfully distilled in the art they make. So if it's music, like, I could imagine someone, a fan of the band, listening to Dead Language the night before Inviting Light came out in anticipation and being like, cool. And then hearing Inviting Light the next day and be like, oh, shit. Like, just like, this is different. I totally understand that. But I think we've done that every time. We've tweaked it a little bit every time. I mean, I don't know if this one is way more, but to us, it's obviously what we want to do because we put it out.
The way you answer that question leads me to believe that you've perhaps heard from other people that it's a bit different.
I mean, even from friends, they'd be like, oh, shit, this is, like, that's what I mean. Yeah, like, there's, like, even friends we'd show, they'd be like, what? Okay. Like, it hasn't been, like, a bewildering thing. Like, what do you mean? Like, how is it so different? Like, you feel it shifting, but, like, we felt it shift every time. You know what I mean? Like, you grow as musicians, you grow as songwriters, you grow as a band, you grow as people. And we always want to try some new shit because it keeps it really fresh. I mean, now on this tour, it's super fun to play these new songs because we obviously play songs from almost every one of our other records too. And it's just for us in the band, it creates this really fun mix of music to play. And yeah, I mean, like, we're all psyched on the record. And I mean, I know it's where we want to be and I know that's where we should be. So I'm psyched.
Well, Chris, it's been a total pleasure to talk to you and to finally say hi again.
Yeah, man.
Is there anything you want to say or anything you want to ask me before we finish?
Well, what is Iron Brew exactly?
Nobody knows.
No one knows. This is why I ask. No one knows.
It's just...
I always get a different answer.
It's Iron Brew flavor.
Like...
That's what it is.
It's like... Some people say it's like Gatorade. Some people say it's an energy drink.
No, it's not.
Some people say that it's
like our version of Coke.
Some people say it's like the best thing to mix with like vodka.
Oh, God, no.
No. Person was dead wrong.
It goes flat immediately and it just tastes like you might like it.
I've had it before. I just mean, the only reason I ask is because every time I ask someone from Scotland, because I believe it's the only place you can get it in the world, is it not?
It's not, you're not allowed to, but we can't sell it to America.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But like
the stuff that's inside it.
Oh, so, interesting.
One of the food colorings, apparently. You can get it in Russia. They make it.
They're
in
so
Russia.
Careful. You can't bring this food coloring into America. Holy shit.
But do you like it? That's the question.
I had it the first time we ever came to Scotland, and I was like, huh. And that was it. Like, I neither good or bad, but that was my entire experience. I had like a whole can or bottle of it or whatever. And I was like, okay. And I've never gone back. But every time we're here, I see it, and I always ask, like, what the fuck is it? And everyone's like, I don't know.
It's basically our version of Coke, almost. Like, okay. It's a Scottish fizzy drink.
Okay.
Soda, I guess. Okay. Soda pop, I suppose you'd probably call it. Man, it's awesome. I drink it. I'm like 90% Iron Brew, as I should be.
Instead of water, it's Iron Brew now. Yeah.
I have to drink more water now because I find that it's getting to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, those heart palpitations are because of the Iron Brew.
Yeah, I can wake up like thinking I'm having a heart attack in the middle of the night. Like, what the fuck?
And then you have a sip of it and you're like, a little tibble of Iron Brew and just sets you straight
in the morning. Like, just fucking give me that bottle.
Oh, yeah, man. Just those rickety nerves just get smoothed right out.
I hear this worse than being alcoholic, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, you've got to quit that shit, man. I'm worried about you.
But yeah, Chris, thank you so much. It's been
my pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers, man.
There you have it. Really nice interview with Chris. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. He's a lovely guy, and I could talk to him for hours and hours and hours on end. Maybe one day we'll do a joint podcast, who knows? But yeah, new album's really good. A bit different, as you may have gathered from my conversation towards the end of the interview. But I really like it, and I hope you do too. They're on Rise Records now, which is obviously a huge thing for them. So I wish them every single success that they can possibly get in future. That's all for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. If you could take a second to rate and review this podcast on iTunes, I would really appreciate that.